This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Hey everybody, guess who we have with us?
Who?
You. And you. Wait, who?
Me.
Yes.
Me and me.
Yes, you and you.
Monica.
And Elby. So, obviously, that means we're going to be watching something with girls in it. More girls than usual. Because that seems to be the thing.
What does that even mean?
With girls in it!
Last Dragon wasn't all girls.
No, but it had a significant two awesome female major parts.
Okay.
And Return to Oz was all that with girls, except for the Gnome King, right? And robots. So, we're here discussing something from 1988 that I've been wanting to watch again since I saw it in the early 90s.
Because you like girls.
Yeah, well, sure, fine. I do. But because it's rather zany. What is it? What did we just watch?
We just watched Earth Girls Are Easy.
Life was pretty dull for Val.
Meaningless sex is what you want. Why can't you have it with me?
Until house guests dropped in on her.
God, you're aliens.
Now she's getting carried away, and she's not the only one.
I want this baby.
3 out of 4 aliens agree. Earth Girls Are Easy, starring Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum.
Do you guys have margaritas on your planet?
Okay, so LB, start us off with Earth Girls Are Easy.
This film stars Gina Davis and Julie Brown and Jeff Goldblum and Damon Wayans and Jim Carrey and Charles Rocket.
Yes. That's true. Checklist.
Done. Wait, Michael McKean.
And Michael McKean.
Right. You can't forget him.
Oh,
right.
I'm sorry, Michael McKean.
There's actually a handful of other actors that went on to do a certain few things. Like Stacey Travis was in, she's one of the Valley Girls in this, in the dance scene. She was in Hardware, which is about a killer robot.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a sculptor that fights the killer robot.
Oh.
So.
Well, this movie is funny and weird and very of its time. And very, very Southern California.
Oh, hell yeah. It is all Southern California. There's nothing Midwestern about this. There's nothing East Coast about it. It's all Southern California.
It is the brainchild of Julie Brown and her writing partner, Charlie Coffey, and also her husband at the time, Terrence McNally. And it kind of, I think, is just the life of Julie Brown.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, what is the story? You go.
Oh, dang, no, all the pressure.
All pressure.
Well, Gina Davis, her character, is about to get married to that Charles Rocket guy.
Dr. Dude.
Just
call him Dr. Dude.
We're going to call him Dr. Dude. Well, they're about to get married and everything. Well, little does she know that he's actually cheating on her.
Constantly stepping out.
And
so
they cut to...
The furry alien dudes are oogling her.
Yeah,
but were they... They were just
floating around in space.
Okay.
And
they
kept on zooming in on Earth because they kept on seeing transmissions of scantily clad bikini babes. And they were like, they have no fur, but I'm totally turned on.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all speaking this gibberish language.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of Jim Carrey's earlier roles. He did Love at First Bite before this. He did some Canadian Ski Mountain movie with Alan Thicke even before that. But also in 88, he did a Dirty Harry movie in which he played an Axl Rose type guy who overdoses on heroin. That was a cameo sort of. This was his first major role. And he was so serious about it that he stressed over his lines of gibberish.
Errolangy Mock Morph. Feeling cool. I'm
surprised.
You're surprised that he's stressed?
Yeah, I mean, he would stress out because this character...
This is so dang serious. I'm not saying Blargy right. That is insane to me.
It seems so Jim Carrey, though. Like he does this in a stand-up all the time. Why would this be such a difficult thing for him to do?
Should be a cakewalk.
Right.
Yeah, but that's why they hired him, because it's a cakewalk for him. But he was like, no, I'm so serious.
Yeah.
I said, but Blargy wrong.
But they weren't really that well-known at the time, even though
Damon Wayans
and Jim Carrey weren't really...
No, they, after this, went on to do In Living Color, and I think it's because of this and their friendship through this show that they were like, yeah, Jim Carrey's good. He can be our token on In Living Color. So, Jeff Goldblum, every time he said his gibberish lines, he's very natural about it. He's like... And there's no hesitation
language,
or weird. Yeah, it's just dumb.
The language is actually Jeff Goldblum, so it's not...
Right.
That's how it speaks.
So that's how he talks.
Okay, so either of you describe the aliens.
Colorful, furry. I mean, it's the two of them, the Damon Wayans and Jim Carrey character. Whiplock and Zeebo, like, they're just very goofy. And
I didn't even remember their names.
Yeah, they're just very, you know, quirky, goofy kind of characters. While Jeff Goldblum, Mac, he's just, you know, like the dad, pretty much, or like, you know.
Big brother.
He's the leader.
Yeah, he's the leader of that group.
So get back to the visuals of what they look like. You said colorful and furry.
It's the primary colors, like red, blue, yellow,
right.
Furry. They kind of look like extraterrestrial furry chickens. I don't know, to me, in my
opinion.
And I didn't notice that at least one of them was wearing like a thong or like,
all
like,
of them are wearing
underwear,
sort
some
of,
kind of space underwear.
A plastic, on the front it's plastic. Okay. So it's like a kind of a cod piece or a cup. And it's molded plastic in the color that their fur is. And they also have a helmet similar to that.
Right.
But the back of it is more like a wedgie than a thong. So they oogle a lady, and then Whiplock and Zeebo are oogling this lady by her pool or in her pool. And that's Gina Davis in an extremely skimpy bikini. This movie is just so of its time. Southern California, 1988. Everything was skimpy and it was very commonplace. And I remember seeing this shortly after 88, so 89, 90. And my parents are very conservative, but I don't remember them objecting to anything like this movie or even later on. Fifth Element has a lot of skimpiness going on. And my mom would walk by the TV and go, what are you watching? Oh, Fifth Element. All right. She'd watch it for 5 or 10 minutes and then go on about her business. And it was just super bizarre that way.
Well, I think it's because it's not designed to be smutty. It's just kind of like, oh, this is the style.
Is that it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, further into the story, they crash their spaceship into her pool. And it's a small VW bug-sized spaceship.
Yeah.
But they grow in order to get out of it, shrink in order to get into it.
Yeah, that's weird. That's really, I think, only addressed once.
Well, no, they do it 2 times when they have to get back in at the end. After that...
So they crash into her pool, and her immediate thought is, oh, I need to get my pool drained so they can fix their ship and leave, and this needs to happen today. So she calls Michael McKean.
And I thought Michael McKean was going to be, like, this was going to be a prototype for his role in Coneheads.
Right. Yeah. You thought that he was going to be the government after
him? Like, because that's what he did in Coneheads, and I realized I was terribly wrong.
No.
Like, my memory was really not there for this movie. So he's just the pool guy.
Yeah.
With a really almost inaccurate, but then it becomes accurate. There's, Southern California.
Yeah, there's cool certain guy. Points that like that he does, like with the accent, it like it's there and then it's not there.
Yeah. Or he's when he shows up, it's not there.
Yeah.
You're not sold on it.
That you're sitting on. Some kind of a giant boogie board.
But way later he's like totally on.
Yeah.
She drove her car into the pool. I'm always doing that. Pretty rad car though. Where's it made?
I was thinking that his performance is probably the weakest in the film.
Yes.
No offense to Michael McKean.
No, but he's always
it's just not quite right for him.
That's,
I don't think. But
he drains the pool, they work on their machine, but in the meantime, they have to look like humans. Or that's Gina Davis's idea because her ex-fiancé is gonna show up at any time. And it'll be just so embarrassing having furry alien dudes. Who are all a 6 footer more.
It would be weird just to have 3 dudes, like human dudes at your house.
Anyway. What are these furry guys doing here? That's not as strange as just 3 guys doing here.
Right. Well, her eventual explanation is,
I won an MTV Weekend with a Band.
Hi, I am Mac. How's it hanging, Mr. Dude?
Dr. Dude.
Dr. Jude.
Right.
Like, you know when MTV would have those contests where they would, you were like, oh yeah, Aerosmith's playing at your house this weekend.
Yeah.
Or something. Like, that was her.
That's actually a pretty good excuse, really. Yeah. But what's the band's name? They never went into that. I want to know what the fake band name is.
It would have been cool, yeah.
So I designed a t-shirt, 2 t-shirts based on a concept called New Wave Laser Cats.
New Wave Laser Cats shoot lasers from their eyes. When laser cats shoot lasers from their eyes.
Not just laser cats from SNL, but new wave laser cats. And the concept is a band of cat aliens are being chased by dog aliens from whatever outer space thing that they are. The cats land on Earth and crash. And it's very similar to Earth Girls Are Easy. That's the germ. But they're an actual band. And then they rock Sunset Strip and they're new wave laser cats. And they...
Yeah.
But in the meantime, the dog bounty hunters come down to Earth, but they're animal people. So they have cat heads and dog heads. But they're chased. And so it's a big adventure. And this this movie, I think, is responsible for that little germ of an idea.
Yeah.
Just that. Hey, that made me a lot of money, that shirt.
Oh. Well, I mean, that's a really cool idea. I mean, I can't believe you can get all of that onto a shirt, though. Like, translate all of that story onto a shirt.
Well, I don't really think that there was, in the New Wave Laser Cats 2, there wasn't a musical motif. But the first one, which wasn't the one that made me money, the second one did. That one had the musical motif. They had guitars and... You sound like you hate me.
I don't know!
Where do we leave off?
The band.
They're trying to become familiar with human culture.
No, Southern California. Southern California.
Yeah, that's right.
Because in the meantime, you have what's happening in the Midwest, which is just like country bars and line dancing, and that's what's happening over there. In Southern California, it's a whole new world. Mm-hmm. Totally different.
Mm-hmm. Once that was happening, and then you were mentioning...
I did not know that this was a musical.
Right at that point, I was already getting a little pissed off because I was like, oh shit, like you're exposing me to a musical. You know, we've had this discussion.
No, neither of us like musicals very much, okay? I don't know. Do you like any musicals? Like probably, Little Shop of Horrors, maybe?
I vaguely remember that one. There's probably maybe like 3, 4, 5 max like shows that I'm like, okay, I'm all right with it, even though it's musical.
Uh-huh. I'm utterly annoyed with musicals because I see them in a sense kind of, they're the same problem that pornography tends to have. The song just goes on way too long. The sex goes on way too long. It doesn't serve, if it's a movie, porno, whatever. It doesn't serve the plot. It doesn't move it along. It just stops the movie dead into a song.
It just reiterates everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's my biggest problem with musicals, other than it's usually awful music.
Right.
But this one's fun.
Is it fun?
I think it's fun.
Is it an actual musical? Because I kind of don't think it is.
It's not really. There's 4 songs, maybe.
There's one real song, and that's her boohoo breakup song.
That's the one that actually I felt was like valid for like this whole entire movie.
Yeah. Yeah. The other songs are kind of just, hey, Julie Brown recorded an album. Let's put her songs in this movie.
Oh, right. Yes. So I'm a blonde.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to that. The beach scene is a fantasy of Whiplock and Zeebo thinking about going to the beach and seeing blonde girls, because the pool guy just takes them to the beach. So Julie Brown has her song sandwiched in, but it's got all the same actors in it. So it was literally shot for this. Mm-hmm. But it also looks different, like a different grain of films, like it was a music video sandwiched into this film.
Mm-hmm.
And it completely confused me when it came up, because they're all in the car,
cut
to the beach scene, and then they're back in the car and they're like, huh. Looking up and thinking. Like, they have this communal thought.
It's really strange. So there's a lot of confusing things about this film. Well, maybe not necessarily confusing. That part was confusing. But there's a lot of things about this film, the direction and the editing and stuff, that doesn't quite work. The whole opening sequence when the aliens are still in space.
Yes.
And, like, we're introduced to them, and it's just awkward. Like, the timing's not right. Like, they're speaking in their language, but it's just, like, they're just kind of floating around really slowly and everything. It's just not right to me. Like, it's not a really good introduction to this film. And the director, I don't know if you know.
I don't know anything about the behind the scenes of this movie, other than Julie Brown had some hand in it.
Well, the director of this film is Julian Temple, who doesn't really do films that much. He does more documentary things. He did The Great Rock and Roll Swindle, which was the Sex Pistols story.
That's why I know his name. Okay.
And other things that he did, another Sex Pistols movie just a few years ago. You know, I mean, like, he's like an English punk rock dude.
Okay.
So it doesn't quite fit to me that, like, he would be the director of this film. And I mean, he does okay, but it's just not...
Well, the production design is all American kitsch. Michael from Video Night would call it cowpunk.
Ah, yeah.
It's not quite cowpunk because it doesn't have that Western slant to it. No cacti, no cowboy hats and cowgirl sort of thing. But he would still call it cowpunk, like a sort of trailer park sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's Southern California suburb valley, but it has that beef. Yeah, you can say it. B-52s sort of vibe to it.
Uh-huh.
I was actually just trying to say 50s B-movie, and it came out B-52s. But B-52s B-movie motif, like the spaceship, looks like a B-movie spaceship, like out of Flash Gordon or something.
Mm-hmm.
While the aliens don't look like anything that we've seen. They're not even like Wookiees where it's just a big shaggy thing. Their fur is fitted to them.
Mm-hmm.
So a British man directing a movie with that production design, I mean, he had to sign off on it, but I wonder how much of it was his vision or how much of it was Julie Brown's vision.
Yeah, it did seem a lot like a Julie Brown's touch. I mean, from the MTV show she had and just the set design on that, it just looked pretty much exactly the same.
Now, her MTV show reminded me a lot of Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking when I was watching it. I'm like, why do I feel like I'm watching Pee-wee's Playhouse?
For young adult women.
Yes.
I don't remember. I was young when Just Say Julie was on. I really barely remember it, but it did stick with me to the degree of I've always been interested in her, in her career. Like, she's just a cute lady. I was one of those people who got Julie Brown and Downtown Julie Brown
confused
because I was a little kid. And like,
for shame.
I know. It's sad. And I'm sorry. I apologize.
Honestly, one's black, one's white, one's British, one's American.
Yeah. I know. But they purposely, like, on MTV, Julie Brown was referred to as Miss Julie Brown.
Downtown. But Julie Brown, this one here, was Miss.
I didn't know. I didn't realize. Yeah. I was just like, Julie Brown. Oh, like, yeah. Not Downtown Julie.
I miss MTV.
Real MTV?
Like,
or...
real MTV. I really, really, really do.
Well, I prefer this MTV over the 80s, early 90s, you know, MTV versus what there is now. There's, like, nothing like that now.
No.
I really don't know what's now. Okay, I know that there's TV shows. Uh-huh. Lots of TV shows. Uh-huh. I mean, I know that there's reality TV shows. Thanks, Real World, you jerk. Started that.
Man, we all loved it at the time, though.
I didn't love it, but I watched it. I don't know why. We watched it. It was like, what's on TV? Oh, I'm watching Real World. Oh, I guess. Okay. Because I guess it was an anomaly. It was the weirdest thing at the time.
Yeah,
looking
yes,
in on people's
reality
lives.
Reality shows that...
Quote, unquote.
Yeah.
But the off shows that they did Austin Stories in later, mid-later 90s, which was a show that happened in Austin, and there was just people in... It was kind of like a Seinfeld sort of thing.
Oh.
But it was a single camera show, so it looked like a movie, and they're just doing nothing, being slackers. That was pretty fun. Syphil and Ollie was pretty fun. MTV used to have a thing in which they would just promote a lot of creativity, and now, uh-huh. I mean, I guess Teen Wolf might be creative, and Scream might be creative, but how are those MTV?
It's more, like, reality-based now, less so about the music, or even... I mean, even the stuff from before wasn't totally all about music. Yeah, some of the shows just had, like, little drops of, like, oh, we're gonna have somebody cameo from a band here or there. Or
uh-huh. Well, speaking of Real World, they would always shoehorn in the soundtrack some music.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how they got away with saying it was still music television, is because they used all the music in those shows.
Yeah.
If you're going to show music videos all day, you really need to have something that's going to break the monotony. Mm-hmm. So something like Just Say Julie was really just creative and entertaining, and then you still got, you know, your music video fix, too.
Right.
I got so angry at MTV Classic.
Hey, I watched that first day.
Yeah, the first day.
The first hour.
Right. That was cool, because, you know...
Which was literally the first hour of all of MTV. The very first MTV, they just took that and they played it again on MTV Classic.
Yeah.
And I watched it and I was like, all right, that's cool. And then
what
the
happened?
Hour mark changed and then it just turned into garbage.
Yeah. The days that were leading up to the launch of MTV Classic, a lot of my friends, like on Facebook or whatever, were just so excited. They're like, oh my god, MTV is going to do this thing. They're just going to show 120 minutes all the time. I'm like, no, they're not. like, don't fall for it.
120 was my show. As far as alternative music and all that stuff, because I was a hip-hop kid, an R&B kid, until I discovered a radio station that led me to 120 minutes, and then I was just all about that, and I kept on learning more about it. And I wasn't like a record shop kid, this was pre-internet. Mm-hmm. So when they started to talk about 120, I was like excited too, and then
And then what happened? Like, the very next day after the launch, what are they doing? They're showing Ghostbusters.
What?
Yeah, on MTV Classic. Yeah. Ghostbusters!
Yeah, awesome. Great job, MTV.
Not music related. Not, well, I mean, they have that theme song, but it's a movie.
Like, really? Thank you. You know what? You have so many hours. I'm sure the MTV has, like, a huge back catalog. And I know sometimes things get erased or things get lost or whatever, but you know that they have to have this enormous back catalog of all the cool old shit. And I'm really saying shit because it is, but it's awesome. It is awesome and they need to show it.
Yeah. I mean, even those weird ska weekends.
Yeah. I mean, flip and...
at the beach house.
Yeah, flip and play the beach house. I don't care.
So, yeah, even something like that would be welcome.
Yeah.
I mean, especially right now for kids discovering the 90s.
Yeah, just don't play Road Rules for 12 hours a day.
I remember those, watching
those. But her show was like Pee-wee's Big House. Pee-wee's Big House. That's something else. Altogether.
Yes.
Yeah, he's been there. That's, I did not mean that was a faux pas. That's not even something I was thinking about. I'm sorry. I hate it when people bring it up.
We love you, Paul Rubens.
I hate it when people bring it up. There's a lot of misunderstanding. I don't assume things about him. Pee-wee's Playhouse! Ah! But his thing was, it was pulling from the same kitsch. Exact same era of kitsch.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also what Tim Burton drew from in his earlier movies.
Uh-huh.
And Julie Brown came from the same era, but in Southern California. I think it is a Southern California thing, really. That vibe. I got here in America in 85, living here permanently from traveling the world in the Air Force, my dad. When I got here, I started discovering B-movies, and they would just show them all the time. And there was a movie called It Came From Hollywood, and that's where I discovered all these B-movie trailers, and I was attracted to that stuff. And I was way younger than them, but they're pulling from that stuff and pushing it to us. I mean, even SNL movies, like I mentioned, the Coneheads, that pulls from that stuff. If there's something interesting and kind of lost about it, it's a forgotten time, and that's what this movie was for me. This was super nostalgic, and I was enjoying every minute of it in spite of myself, because I hate nostalgia.
This movie is so nostalgic, though.
Yeah. But even more so for me, because I'm like, I'm 14! I'm in Southern California!
Yeah, you're
I'm Oogling Babes!
Yeah, you're like, oh, that's Angeline! And we're like, who?
I didn't know who the heck Angeline was.
Alright, describe Angeline, somebody.
What are adjectives for Angeline? I almost want to say robotic. She seems strangely robotic to me. Like, she's uncanny, I guess?
A fembot?
Yeah.
She looks like a fembot. All pink, bubblegum, Barbie-looking pink robot.
But from the mid-60s to the late-60s style. It seems like she would always have a puffy poodle with her big glasses, beehive hairdo.
Why is she famous? She's just like some lady that hung out in Hollywood?
Yes. So from my knowledge, without looking anything up on Wikipedia prior, being in Southern California, even just driving around in LA every once in a while, you'd pass this street, and I forget where it is. I'm not looking it up. There's a billboard that she bought, and I don't know if she changed the image every so often, but she bought this billboard and she would put her image on it and would say Angeline, and she'd be like reclining on her side, pinup style laying or reclining doing something. That's what her thing is to be like this kitschy pinup Barbie girl
sex kitten
sort of
thing.
Yeah, and that's it. That's what she's famous for.
That's all.
I don't know how she makes money, if she's really wealthy or not, but she's just this Hollywood anomaly, a mainstay. And I don't know where she is now.
Did people outside of California know her too?
Not that I know of.
Yeah, because it's like, I wouldn't,
just
if
from
I watched
this movie.
Watching this, I didn't get anything out of her. Other
you
than,
just
like,
saw,
her
like,
aesthetic.
Who is this,
like,
weird person?
Weird pink lady.
Yeah. That also has to do with the beach scene. They stop off to gas up the car, and then they end up stealing the car, robbing the place on accident.
On accident, robbing,
because they have a squirt gun, and the cops get involved.
Toys R Us.
That's it?
Yeah.
I think that might be one of them now.
Are you sure?
Not really.
Good enough for me.
Then the cops are constantly involved, and they're also like...
We got a false report. Just a domestic dispute. His girlfriend dumped him.
For a rock band.
Yeah.
About everything. Dismissing every zany thing. Uh-huh. And Jeff Goldblum makes them gay.
It doesn't work like that.
I mean, have you met Jeff Goldblum?
I was going to ask you, actually.
No, I'm watching a movie.
If I were a man.
It doesn't affect me that way, but in person, maybe. I don't know.
He just needs to give you those bedroom eyes. Like, he's always giving everybody, like, those eyes, dude. Something about him. It's just...
So I'm saying maybe it does work that way. So he touches them on their shoulders. Basically, he's got Cupid powers, and then they start flirting with each other.
Hey, how about those Lakers, huh?
What about those incredible eyes of yours?
What?
They're just this far from Liz Taylor Violet.
Oh, Michael.
And they get to the hospital, and then they find Whiplock and Zeebo there with Dr. Dude.
Dr. Dude.
Who's like freaking out because they have double heartbeats. It's like kick drum hearts. Yeah, so she wants to get back so desperately with Dr. Dude. Why?
Why? I don't know. I mean, she found out that he's not really faithful to her. And
he's still, so, he keeps on lying to her, and then he's like, no, it's not like I still can't see you, talking to the
other girl, the nurse, or,
yeah.
Which, I don't know, when, you know, she's like, okay, I'm losing my guy, let me go ahead and, I gotta change my appearance, make myself look pretty.
Because he likes blondes.
Yeah, so he prefers blondes.
And that's even early on, when she learns that he's cheating on her, she does this whole insecure change to blonde thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just a wig. I mean,
in contacts.
Nothing else was changed, even though there's this big old scene where she's being done up, and I guess that was a musical number.
That was the musical. Was that the first one?
I think so.
They go to the beauty salon because Janie Davis is a manicurist.
Yeah.
And Julie is the hairdresser.
Right.
Who shaves the aliens and makes them hot.
Yeah.
How did she do that?
I don't know.
There's not a very big pile of hair. I know that this is a BS scene because when I get a haircut, and I always have short hair, there's a huge pile of hair left behind from just monogam. So,
yeah,
it's just like a slightly larger pile of hair than that. No,
you know, they turned this into a stage musical.
Did they?
Off Broadway. It took several years.
But I don't want to see that.
I don't really either. I think there's like a karaoke scene or something. Kristen Chenoweth was in it.
You know who she is?
Yes, I know. Her voice, and she's a tiny little girl.
Yeah.
Lady.
So I don't know much about it.
That makes it a little bit more interesting, this little sprite pixie popular singer lady.
Well, she has, I mean, she actually sings really well.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really good. She's a Tony winning performer.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Do you know when that show is airing? When we can go? I'm not going.
No, I don't.
I just want to know like if you
early,
know.
Okay. It was like the early 2000s.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's...
I was going to have to try to avoid that.
Yeah.
Because no stage musicals for me. Boring.
Aww, could be fun.
Could be. Could but be. Probably isn't.
She sings Whip It, apparently.
Oh, no.
At karaoke.
No. No.
You don't want to see that?
No. You know, hey, do you like Devo? Yeah, Whip It. Whip It's good. I like Whip It. No. Any other Devo? Yeah, Whip It.
Well, she's not going to sing Mongoloid.
Well, like, she could sing even, like, Satisfaction, which is the other, like, go-to Devo thing. Or, like, I don't know. I'm not even that into Devo. Rob. That's for you, Rob. Sorry. That's a reference to an earlier episode involving Oingo Boingo.
What else about this movie?
Okay, so I was going to ask this question, which was, who is this movie made for? Being that it has sci-fi earmarks in 1950s kitsch like that, but science fiction stuff. And then everything else. Who was this movie made for, do you think?
I don't want to admit it.
What?
Chicks, man.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So the title, Earth Girls Are Easy, that does not sound like a movie that women would want to see.
Right. Nope.
So it's...
And Gina Davis has that line.
I just don't want you to think Earth Girls are easy.
But yeah, it's definitely a chick flick. It's kind of an anomaly. It's not your typical chick flick. It's fun and interesting, but like, it does have that theme of like, why she still wants to be with this guy.
Because he's a doctor and she's a manicurist.
I guess. And like, you don't want to go there. Like, you don't want to be like, oh, but yeah, she's so shallow.
The movie doesn't let you think that she's better than they present her. She's an idiot. It constantly reiterates that she's just dumb. Okay. The only thing that she did that was kind of smart was saying the MTV band thing.
Mm-hmm.
Every other thing, she was just dumb. And she's not even a dumb blonde, which is interesting that they didn't do that, because that was a trope in Hollywood, dumb blonde.
I don't know if I would call her dumb. Exactly. I think more naive, and there's an innocence about her. Gina Davis does a really great job in this film, which is interesting because everyone makes note that prior to this film, Gina Davis had just won an Academy Award. Yeah.
For Accidental Tourist.
Yes, yes. Even like Roger Ebert, because I always like to read his takes on every film that we watch. He's like, wow, this is really weird. But she does such a genuinely good job. You know, I hadn't really paid much attention to Gina Davis's career. She's just always one of those actresses that I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever. But you know what? She's a good actor. She always has good performances.
Yeah, I know what.
What?
You do. Okay, you know what else? What? At the time, Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum were married.
They was a couple from The Fly.
Yeah, everybody.
Since The Fly?
Yeah.
Yeah, they were. Everyone commented on like just how in love they actually were, and like so it was really easy for them to be like staring into each other's eyes and getting all googly and everything, because it was just natural.
So the weirdness of this movie right now comes from just kind of like it's a non-musical musical. The kitsch involved, the performances of the aliens, in particular the comedic performances of Damon and Jim Carrey. Damon mm-hmm. Wayans and Jim Carrey. He goes by one name.
Damon. We all know
by
Damon.
Damon. Yeah. So,
sounds like a cologne.
Damon. So their performances are really odd and silly and fun. And of course, Julie Brown's visual aesthetic and what she brings with the song I'm a Blonde.
Yeah, she's really fun.
But her energy.
Yeah. Yes. There's two things that really make this sort of super weird. One is a dance scene with Damon Wayans and Zoot Suit, I'm gonna call him.
Yeah,
and they're
I don't know
just
why.
Fight dancing over dancing with a lady.
Mm-hmm. He looks strangely familiar, but I don't know who he is.
Yeah, right? I don't either. Maybe he was in like a Prince movie or something.
Maybe. I don't know. But he does look like he had that face. He was in something else.
And the scene goes on forever, and I think that they edited it in a way that it should have been edited, where the last sequence should have been first, and the first sequence that they did should have been last, or something similar to that.
It's
because
not
like
right.
There's a cage dance where there are two different go-go cages at the end of the dance sequence, and that goes on for a bit, and then it just kind of fizzles out.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a starter. You gotta slow people
into the
crazy dancing.
I'm not sure who won the dance fight.
Right?
Yeah,
well,
no.
Zoot Suit's sitting there like, oh dang, he out cage danced me. I don't know, man.
but did
like,
he?
Did he? Yeah. No, he just climbed up to the top of the cage and like monkey barred it. That's where he did. So I'm thinking that should have been at the very beginning of the dance scene. And at the end, all the crazy acrobatics where they're completely in sync with each other, which was impressive. I know they want musical, right? This is sort of like a musical moment.
Yeah.
Because there's music going on, but there's no singing. It's not a musical like that. So I understand that, but it's just the editing of it that's weird. The other thing is this big dream sequence.
Yeah.
Where she turns on the TV and it's a B-movie.
I forgot all about
that.
And
she changes channels and they're all B-movies except for one of them is the French Beauty and the Beast. I think it might have even been a silent film, but it's definitely subtitled. And that's because of the fur face. They wanted that thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all black and white, and then it shifts. Her scenes, which were color, are now black and white too, and everything is black and white. And she has this nightmare basically that everything is an alien, but they're not just aliens like the furry people. They're all kinds of fake Hollywood aliens. What Pee Wee's Big Adventure did when they're driving through the back lot and you see aliens walking back and forth. Well, they were all prepping for this movie, I guess.
for these scenes.
Because it's all those kinds of aliens, like the rubber heads, the rubber masks, the space suits, and
they look like sea creatures.
There's a little girl that has the creature from the Black Lagoon mask.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's actually interesting too, because the camera shifts and you look outside at the suburbia and you see it in color, and then it comes back to her and it's black and white after. So that's a very strange scene. And then Charlie's got the spacesuit on and he's kind of like a maniac at the end of it.
Yeah, is he flirting with the nurse? She's also an alien.
Everything's an alien except for Dr. Dude and her.
Isn't it funny how doctors insist on being called doctor?
Doctor.
Like, if you call them Mr. Oh.
Doctor.
They correct you.
Mr. Doctor.
Mr. Doctor.
Doctor. Side note, okay, so I worked in a hospital for a while, and I used to pass by this car in the parking garage. It was a white Jaguar convertible, and it had a Grateful Dead sticker on it.
Ew.
And the license plate said surgeon, S-I-R-J-U-N. And I hated that doctor so much. Every day, I was like, I'm going to key your car. But I never did.
Good, because that makes you not an asshole.
I'm a decent person.
Terrible spelling.
Yeah, but so I'm...
Maybe he was like a Asian guy who liked to be called Sir. Sir Jun. Huh?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe he was knighted.
He was knighted.
Perhaps. I get really annoyed with
that. A Korean knight.
I
don't know.
Who likes the Grateful Dead?
Yeah. Why not? I mean, except for the Grateful Dead's terrible. I just alienated all of our audience.
But she's having that dream after she and Mac.
Right. She and Mac get it on.
Yeah.
She has really funny facial expression when she's like,
you're an alien and I'm from the valley, and we may not even be, you know, anatomically correct for each other. That could be a real problem. No problem. But I mean,
basically, he's got a big wiener or something. But her expression is really funny. Her eyes get really wide, especially in the middle of her, like, no thanks face.
And then it's like, okay. Like, yes.
I don't want you to think that Earth girls are easy, and then she's easy. Mm-hmm. And then she wants to get back together.
Yeah, why does she feel so guilty?
Yeah, she's
having,
she's having remorse.
Like, go with Jeff Goldblum.
And yeah, everything after that, Jeff Goldblum thinks is he keeps walking in at inopportune times, hearing things about her wanting to get back together, or maybe mishearing her saying stuff about wanting to get back together. So then he keeps on going like, okay, hands off, I'm backing off, I'm leaving. So then they fix the ship, and finally, they're about to leave. She's getting back together with Dr. Dude. And then Dr. Dude freaks out because he sees the spaceship. And so Goldblum does his Cupid powers from afar and makes him make out for a little bit. And then she breaks from that. And I was like, no, I want to go with you. And Julie Brown shows up at the end like,
wait, you guys, you can't leave without margaritas.
Valerie, what are you doing?
Goodbye, Candy. I'll miss you.
Good luck, Val. Call me. Happy trails.
Margaritas.
Yeah, that's margaritas.
Canned margaritas.
Yeah, it was a product. And I forgot that those were products because I didn't drink back then. I hardly drink now. I don't still want people to think I'm an alcoholic. Maybe I should start drinking heavily while doing the show.
Yeah, because that's so cool when people brag about being drunk doing podcasts.
Do they do that?
Yes. Talking to everyone who has a podcast on Twitter. No. I'm kidding. But there are plenty of people.
I'm so drunk I watched this crazy movie. It's so weird.
It's so cool because I definitely want to listen to a bunch of drunk people I don't know talk about stupid crap. That's definitely appealing.
Point is, I forgot about those little margarita things. And then she throws them and...
There's a lot of product placement in there. I mean, aside from that, but then that was just everything that was going on. It's just... product placement.
What do you think about product placement? I wasn't going to ask this question. It just occurred to me. What do you think about product placement in movies that are set in kind of a real world? This is supposed to be a real world. Uh-huh. When I go to the store or go buy a store or drive, there's always signs for things here and there. Uh-huh. Is it lame, obnoxious, whatever, in movies to be kind of reflective of that?
Depends on how overt it is.
Was this movie so overt?
Not really. No. I mean, for example, I remember on Wayne's World, when they're like really pushing it in your face, like, you know, that to me was funny.
Yeah, but that's like satire against the obnoxious version of it. So they make it even more obnoxious.
But like, say in Adam Sandler movies had really started just doing that too, where it's just like, you know, it's just things there, they're not talking about it or whatever, but it's there in your face, like.
And it's not used actually as a prop. The person isn't reaching for it and drinking from it or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just on the table.
So that annoyed me more than, you know.
Gina Davis goes to the refrigerator and gets out a six-pack of Diet Coke. And you're like, oh, yeah, okay, she's getting Diet Coke. But, like, it's organic to the scene.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
You know, it's fine.
Organic. The Pop-Tarts. It's all natural.
Right. Yeah, that was funny.
That's hilarious.
To which I'm like, no, it's not.
No.
BS. Uh-uh. All natural Pop-Tarts. Low calories.
That's definitely a comment on the Southern California.
That's the dumb thing that I was talking about. How she's dumb like that about...
She buys into things. Is that what you mean about dumb?
Well, she says some dumb things before. She says inaccurate things at certain times. Like Finland.
Capital of Norway.
Like she's dumb.
Yeah, okay.
And they don't play it up that she's a bigot. It's just... an organic part of her, and they don't play it down either that she's a big idiot. She's just an idiot. And Julie Brown seems to be the smart one of the two. She has the least amount of time in the screen. And why doesn't she get on the spaceship with them at the end?
I know, that bothers me.
It bothers me too. Yeah. Like, she's got these two dudes that want to hang out with her, at least the Jim Carrey one.
They made out
a bunch. And like, she's like, oh, I got margaritas. No, we're already hovering. Sorry.
So that went nowhere, you know.
Seriously.
I would be really sad if I was Julie Brown.
She's like, okay, bye, have fun, I guess.
So your best friend's about to like leave into outer space, and that's the only thing, like, okay, bye.
Come back, pick me up too.
I want to party in space.
Right? It's Especially it's Julie Brown and, yeah, the crazy zany Jim Carrey. Whiplock. Crazy names. All right, moment of truth. Monica.
Yes.
Would you recommend this movie to anyone?
Yeah, I would. Surprisingly, you know, yesterday I thought otherwise. I was just kind of like, no, this is the worst thing that I could have ever seen in my life. Why did you subject me to this? No one should ever go through it. But today I thought about it. I was like, you know what? It's fun. It was really campy. It was fun.
There's a word that I don't disagree with. Camp.
Camp.
Really, I disagree with most of the uses for camp. Because usually they just mean cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even kitschy. But camp is something else. And this is a good definition of camp. Psycho Beach Party is another campy thing. This is camp, and I don't disagree. So good.
Yeah. So I would say, yes, at least once, go for it.
You might get I'm a Blonde in your head.
I did get I'm a Blonde in my head this morning in the shower, and I think I might have, like, sung it out loud, but...
Yes!
So I guess that's a good sign, right?
Yes, that is great. And Elby?
Yeah, I think I would recommend this film not to anyone, I don't think. I mean, I think that there's a certain type of person who would not have the patience for this whatsoever.
Right.
So, as always with any weird movie, I think there's a very selective audience.
We never even mentioned this before. Have either of you seen this film or heard of this film before? You did
no,
a little
I,
bit.
I heard,
of
heard
it,
about
right?
it. I remember seeing the poster at a local video store and saying that I should try and watch this. Like, the posters are all that you have to go by at the time. And so it's like, oh, it looks fun. Sure.
But you never got
to it. I never got to it.
Elby.
I think I watched it a while ago, but I really don't remember.
Didn't watch it with me.
I feel like it's one of those films that, like, the babysitter had on or something. So I have a very vague memory of it.
That makes sense. That would make sense. It's around the time that it would probably come on cable.
Right, because I was, what was this, 88?
88, so 89, 90 was when
so,
it
yeah,
came
I
on cable.
So yeah, I would have been no more than 10 years old.
Right. Of course, I say watch it if you're interested in any of the things that we described, like kitsch, 50s B-movies, maybe musicals. The B-52s have two songs, actually, Summer of Love and Cosmic Thing. And the dream sequence, going back to that, freaked me out because towards the end of the dream sequence, for about 5 seconds, a Jesus and Mary Chain song shows up, and I'm a big fan of them, and I jokingly said, "What is this, a Jesus and Mary Chain song?" And it was. But it's like only 5 seconds of it. You know, I couldn't really tell, but I was like, just, there's something about it.
That was probably Julian Temple.
Yeah?
Yes, let's put Jesus and Mary Jane in.
Yeah, I know these guys from Scotland, they need a leg up. Yeah.
Hey, did you know that Juno Temple is his daughter?
No. Okay, that's cool.
The actress?
That's cool. That makes sense as to why she does really strange movies, too. So, yeah, I would recommend it to people who... Actually, people who are interested in discovering stuff about early MTV because of the links to Julie Brown and so on.
Yeah, a lot of it that hits me in the heart, like, really, really hard. There's a lot of it that I can't really stomach. Like, really, the opening alien scene, I'm like, oh my god, this is the worst.
The wire stuff and whatever.
Yeah,
now they're floating
really,
around all dorky
really bad.
With it.
And some of the dance sequences and stuff, like you were saying, it's just really so long. If this film was edited differently, I think it could be really, really great. And I mean, it is a cult classic. And I really love Julie Brown. Her songs are just hilarious and silly. Like, the Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun. That's, like, such a good freaking song.
It is.
You know? But a lot of this film is made specifically for me, I feel. But I can't really say it's one of my favorites. Because the lack of patience parts kind of outweigh.
Gotcha. You need 8 to 10 minutes cut from this film.
Yeah, it's not perfect, but it is fun.
Yeah, I mentioned the nostalgia thing before. I was really feeling summer when I was 14 or 15. And that's a weird feeling because I'm always like, live now, not then. Live now! It's happening now! Watch it with your brain now! And I was like, no, this is SoCal! Whoa, bro! Set me the volleyball!
Okay, so yeah, you know what? I'm calling you out right now, I think. Is your problem with nostalgia is that, like, most of the things that people are nostalgic for don't apply to you.
Dang. Look at that reaction.
That's interesting.
So you're like, oh no, forget that, man.
I don't know, because most of the time I'm nostalgic for things that I didn't even experience, like Americana, the Southwest car trip, truck stop thing. This, I don't know. It was just a memory of my youth thing. Uh-huh. I'm not usually nostalgic for volleyball or beach life, but I lived in SoCal back then, so. I don't know. That's a thought to think about.
There's a life lesson there, Andrew.
Somewhere. Buried deep. And on that note, everybody, I bid you adieu. Say bye.
Bye.
Bye. I want a party in space.